Hi, my name is Don Roden. I'm 71 years old. I live in Amarillo, Texas. I'm currently at the Texas Panhandle War Memorial in Amarillo, Texas, with my wife, Rosemary. And we're here to tell a little bit of our story.
Hi, my name is Rosemary Roden. I am 68, and today is Wednesday, October the 29th, 2020, and we are in Amarillo, Texas. And this is my husband, Don Roden, and he's going to tell us about his life and what took him to the Vietnam War.
Well, let me go back a little bit and tell you a little bit about my childhood. I had four brothers. I was a baby, so I really got a lot of attention. So my mother, I guess pampered me a little bit more than others. But I always seemed to get my way. But I had three wonderful brothers, Sam, my oldest one, Gene, my next oldest one, and then Jim next to me, and myself. And we grew up actually initially on a farm outside of Houlton, Texas. And, typical farm boys, we got into a lot of trouble probably, but we had a lot of fun throwing dirt clods and just having a lot of fun. But unfortunately, my dad lost the farm, and we had to move into a little bit of small suburb, not a suburb, a small little town called Halfway. And he worked for the county, and that's where we went after we left the farm. And we stayed there several years, and my experience was fantastic. During that time, I got to go out on weekends, and then in the summer with my dad on the big maintainer, which was a road grader, and I loved that. And and far as my brothers, we did a lot of rock throwing. We did a lot of what we called army playing. We played Cowboys and Indians. So it was really a good childhood. But unfortunately, when I was in the eighth grade, that my family did split up. My mom and dad got divorced, and that sort of really separated the two younger brothers with the two older brothers. My two older brothers stayed with my dad in Halfway, and then my brother next to me, Jim, we moved off to Austin and lived with my mother and stepfather. But anyway, I went to various schools around Austin, and we moved to Baytown, and I really felt all my roots was still in West Texas, in the Plainview, Houlton, Amarillo area. So actually, on my own, I got up and moved back to Houlton, Texas, and lived with a friend during my high school years. And that's really was the turning point of my life on deciding what to do. I knew that back then, this was 1967 when I was in my senior year, I knew that, I couldn't afford college. So, back then we didn't know anything too much about grants and things. So I thought my only alternative was to join the military. And I thought, well, the military can also, pay for my education when I get out. So after I finished my senior year at Houlton, I enjoyed the summer, and then I decided to join the Marine Corps. So I come up to Amarillo, took my swearing oath to join the Marines, and I was in boot camp in September of 1967. And the Marine Corps, I knew that I always wanted to join the Marine Corps because that was, supposed to be a tough group. And I guarantee it was. Boot camp was really tough. It really taxed you. They break you down, and then they build you back up and really do a good job of getting you physically and mentally fit. And we did do a lot of training. I knew that I would probably be going to Vietnam. So we did initial basic training in San Diego, MCR depot. And after I finished boot camp, I did get a 2-week leave, come home to Houlton, visited friends and family. And then I went back to ITR, which is infantry training, more specialized training. So during that time, we trained on various tactics and weapons and things. And getting close to the end of my training, that was the when the Tet Offensive occurred in Vietnam. So they actually shortened our training time by 2 weeks, and they shipped us out on Valentine's Day of 1968. So I was immediately, we were immediately flown into the war zone, which was in Da Nang. And, at first I didn't, I didn't feel really fearful for my life too much. But as time goes on and seeing buddies come in and in body bags and going out on patrol and not coming back and being airlifted to medevac hospitals and things, it got real serious real quick. We did a lot of night patrols. We did a lot of day patrols, and a lot of the encounters were, we just saw shadows mostly at night, and we would encounter the VC or NVA, and we would have most of the time where they were very short firefights, and if we wound up, killing any of the VC or NVA, we would take them to the local village that we were close to and let them try to identify the bodies. But typically, we would go out on patrol during the day, and really the heat was stifling. I mean, we wore flak jackets, but it was still very, very uncomfortable trying to walk in any distance in the heat in the swamp. And try to stay cool itself, and we actually had to drink water out of a lot of the wells in Vietnam, and they give us halazone tablets, which we could purify the water fairly quick, but it was still something that you really had to take a chance on. And there was one I volunteered for an activity that a lot of people, you have to volunteer for, or, it's not a job that they train you for. I become a tunnel rat. I had decided to, I would take my chances and go into the tunnels, and I would either go in there and flush the NVA out, or, our other group could, either capture them or kill them. And also the booby trap issue was a big deal. We had to really watch to make sure no booby traps were around the tunnels. I would usually take C4, which is an highly explosive. I would take C4 down in the tunnels and usually set the charge for about 15 or 20 seconds, and then I would pull a pin and hurriedly get out of the tunnel. I do remember actually the first tunnel that I ever went in, as I did that, and I pulled a pin, jumped out, and started running, and got behind a rice paddy, and I looked beside me, and there was a artillery round that had been shot, but it had not blown up. So I thought, man, I hope this thing don't go off, cause the concussion of the blast that I put in the tunnel. But luckily, it did not go off, and that was one of my chances that I escaped over in Vietnam. But anyway, we were one of the big times that we were out on patrol. Our squads, we were headed up further up north of Da Nang. We were going to reinforce another Marine unit that had come under fire, pretty heavy fire, and we were we had walked quite a ways, and then our squads decided to split up, and one squad would go around one flank, and we would go around another flank. But what I was carrying at the time was what they call LAWS. It was a portable rocket launcher that I carried and used. And I had actually, at the time we split up, I had three of them on my back, and so the other squad leader wanted to have one of those to have a little bit more firepower for their squad in case they encountered some heavy fire. So I pulled one of them off my shoulder and handed it to him. And it happened to be these rounds are, it's really ready to fire. So anyway, I was walking down a trail. I do remember, I mean, it's just like yesterday. And I was actually the second one from the end on the squad. We had about 10 people left in our squad that we were walking down a path, and all of a sudden I was on my back, and it felt like I was in a barrel, and I had stepped on a booby trap, and they said it blew me up about 15 feet straight up. So you know, I was laying on my back and I could not move, and I guess really the first thing I asked them was, have I got both my legs? I couldn't really tell that if I had. And my arm was up on my, you know, I know my left arm was pretty high, and I looked at my left arm, and my left arm was almost severed at the elbow from shrapnel. So anyway, my right foot was really hurting really, really bad. And I told him to, you know, try to take my boot off if you can, and relieve the pressure. So they did that. And also at the time I had them put a poncho liner over me because the sun was beating down on us really, really bad, and it was really hot. And I guess the powder burns from the blast had burned my legs quite a bit. But they took my boot off, and it didn't help much, seemed like. But you know, I was conscious the whole time, and the blast had broken my right leg so bad that it busted my right tibia and fibia, and they were sticking out my leg. So that was what was, you know, pretty painful. But we started getting a small arms fire at the time, so that didn't help things. And I can remember them on the radio calling for a medevac, and it was a WIA, which I'm glad, which is wounded in action. They called for a WIA medevac chopper. And so anyway, between the small arm fire and really the medevac chopper trying to come in, they took two or three attempts to try to, you know, get me picked up. And so I can remember the time they put me on a poncho liner, and actually the chopper never did land. They just threw me up into the chopper, and we took off toward Da Nang. And that's where they stabilized me. And, you know, they did give me a spine when I can remember them picking up my legs and poking me with a needle, and they, you know, I couldn't even feel my leg. So they had done the spinal to do the surgery and remove a lot of the shrapnel and I guess place the bones. I stayed there a few days. I was transferred to Tripler General Army Hospital in Hawaii, where they did the final, I guess, surgeries on my arm and legs. I had to have several skin grafts on my leg to repair wounds. I probably had at least 500 or more stitches in my legs overall. I did rehab there quite a bit. And anyway, I remember the therapy was pretty tough, trying to get my arm to move and walk and things. Excuse me. Anyway, I stayed there 3 months, and then they transferred me to Tripler General, or transferred me to Corpus Christi Naval Hospital in Corpus Christi, Texas. And it happened to be that my brother was in the Navy at the time, and he had just got back from a deployment in the Navy from Vietnam. And I was stayed there for 3 months and still did rehab and got recovered. And then they sent me back out to California for my final tour. And I actually got out early out from being in Vietnam. So I spent a little over 2 years in the Marine Corps. I was a corporal in the United States Marine Corps when I got out. And I did go to Amarillo College in West Texas A&M on my GI Bill after I got out. And then started my career that I eventually finished up with Zachary Engineering after 41 years, 7 months, and then I retired 2 years ago. So anyway, that was my story, and I was very glad to serve my country, and I do not regret it. But also, it's really, you know, my message to the young kids is, you know, freedom is not free. And there's always a price to pay. And this Texas-Pan Am War Memorial is a direct reflection of what it's for, is for families and friends to come and honor those that did make the sacrifice, and a lot of them did make a make the ultimate price, or pay the ultimate price, and lost their life.
And I cannot begin to say how proud I am of Don for his service. And it has been hard over the years to watch him be in pain, and not a lot they can do about it. It has gotten better over the years. The VA has improved. It has gotten better for the servicemen and the ones with injuries. It has gotten better. But it has been hard to be his wife and to know what he went through and to know the suffering he went through. But I cannot begin to say how proud I am of him. My brother served 2 tours in Vietnam and luckily came home safely. He did have friends that did not. My dad was in World War II, in the Army Air Corps. We both come from military families, and we are proud, very proud Americans.
Now, my dad was a World War II veteran in the Army, and fought at the Battle of the Bulge, and I was very proud of him for doing that. I really wish I'd spent more time with him talking about his military career and what he did go through. And I remember from time to time, he kept asking me to join the local VFW or an American Legion. And I really, you know, when I got out of the military, I was angry, but I just really did not want, you know, really be associated with anything that had to do with, I guess violence. But I have definitely changed my thinking, because between the VFW and the American Legion and other organizations that support the military is very, very important. In fact, I am the commander of the Military Order of the Purple Heart, Chapter 553, which is covers the upper 26 counties of the Texas Panhandle here. Our mission is to serve all combat wounded veterans and their families, and do what we can to support them. But also, I have been elected to the board of directors for the Texas Panhandle Texas Panhandle War Memorial and Education Center. I'm very proud to be a part of that. We've got great plans. We've just opened up a education center that really is really top notch. It's going to be really nice for the local schools that can come and be educated on the various wars and the different different things that our veterans did go through.
I think it's the military is a very wonderful thing, and I think there's something for everyone in the military, whether it's a child, a boy or a girl out of high school, and they can't afford to go to college, or it's kids out of college and wanting to pursue higher learning in the military. And it teaches you patriotism, it teaches you responsibility, leadership. I still think that the military is a wonderful thing for our country, and they all should give it a chance.
Yeah, there have been lots of veterans that have come out of the military with great careers that they have developed, within the military, and then they're very, very fortunate. And I guess one of the ones that really offers a really good career path is aviation, but you do have to commit to, I think when I was going in, it was 6 years. You had to commit to 6 years because of the extensive training, but it paid off in the end. So I know a lot of friends right now that have, was in the aviation, and they've got really good careers and then done well.
Every 4th of July, now that we have grandkids, we have a big party in our backyard on the 4th of July. We do fireworks, we play patriotic music, we march with sparklers, we talk about Fort McHenry. We just have a wonderful time, because if we do not teach our kids, I know that they might not be taught. So I think it's a wonderful thing to be patriotic and to remember our country and where we came from.
So do you have any questions for us?
Could you two talk about when you met and how you met?
Well, okay. I was early in my career in here in Amarillo, Texas, and I was here with my three brothers at the time, and two of them had started a auto parts business, and they were I had one brother that was dedicated to that, and then one brother that was actually the brains of that business, and he actually was in the x-ray business, and you know, we were back then the thing to do was either drag Polk Street or you know, go to parties or some of the local pub hangouts or bars that we would
this was back in the 70s
go dancing, and and we enjoyed dancing, and that was when the bump was real popular.
He's getting to. I met him. I went to happy hour after work. I worked at a bank, and I met him at happy hour, and that started the relationship. And we were together always after that, and got married. And it's been a wonderful marriage.
Had one wonderful daughter, Shelley, and they've given us three great
grandkids.
Wonderful grandkids, and we enjoy them every day.
And Don, are you still connected with some of the other men that you served with? Like, do you still have friendships from that time?
I'm really not. I mean, I had several that was killed in Vietnam, and the one, I guess one of some of the close ones that I remember was killed, and I've really, you know, again, I'm not angry on the military. I just never have, you know, really got into really reliving some of those, you know, times. So I've really not gone to any of the any activities or receptions that any of our units have had in the past.
Mm-hmm. So what does your, you know, involvement with the war memorial, what does, like, what kind of stuff do you do with them?
Well, we actually, the board of directors themselves, they meet weekly here at the War Memorial. We talk about the different ceremonies we are going to have. We plan those ceremonies. In fact, we're planning the Veterans Day ceremony as we speak, and we are looking forward to that November the 11th. But also, we do, you know, we try to contact various businesses and individuals that will support and contribute to the War Memorial. We do activities here that will bring, you know, different veteran families to the War Memorial, and just really honor and pay tribute to their loved ones that may have already, you know, that passed away or even lost their life during the military. We've got memorials out there that identify all of the Texas Panhandle veterans that have lost their life in all of the wars in the past. We've got a great now education center. We got a lot of military artifacts, history data that in on various wars. So a lot of people can come here and learn all about, you know, Afghanistan war, Vietnam War, Korean War, World War II. And we're adding to this education center, you know, all the time, and trying to get folks to donate artifacts to it. Yeah. So it's a great facility. We are very fortunate that the early board of directors and leaders of the War Memorial was able to have the vision and develop this this memorial.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah. I had another recording yesterday with some folks that are involved. So it seems like there's a big veteran community in Amarillo. Is that true?
That's true. We got several organizations. There's Vietnam Veterans of Amarillo, American Legion, VFW. VFW is one of the biggest organizations here. VFW Post 1475. Joey Avey, he is the commander. He's doing a fantastic job for the VFW members and the community for them. And he is actually on the board of directors as well for the Texas Panhandle War Memorial. Hmm. And we do reach out to other chapters of the military or the Purple Heart. We reach out to Lubbock chapter 0900, and Commander Steve Owen, we've combined our resources and helped, you know, various families in getting more recognition for their family. We actually had a coin, a challenge coin generated for Thomas Creek and his family. You know, Thomas Creek was a Medal of Honor winner, or actually recipient. And
from Amarillo.
Yeah, from Amarillo. The local Veterans Affairs Hospital is named after Thomas Creek. So his family is still here, and we presented a challenge coin to him and to his brother and his family, and they were very proud of that. We did a bench for Sergeant Cameron Medic out of Spearman. We had several folks that that actually they volunteered as well as donated funds to. We wanted to plant. They wanted to plant three trees in recognition and honor Sergeant Medic. We had Krause Landscape. They went up and planted the three trees, and then we had a nice granite bench engraved to honor Sergeant Medic, and that was completed this year, and we were very proud of that. So we support, you know, the Military Order of Purple Heart Chapter 553. We do support a lot of activities throughout the Panhandle. We help the various programs at the VA hospital, the clothing program, the housing program. And so we just try to get donations as well for our chapter to do various activities for the veterans and their families.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's really great that there are all the programs that you have. Has the programming been able to continue throughout the pandemic, or have you had to stop?
Well, it has had its limitations. We were planning on a real big grand opening ceremony here at the Texas Panhandle War Memorial. We were not able to do that because of the pandemic. So that was a very big disappointment. But we did go ahead and open up, and we do now follow the COVID guidelines in place that the governor has placed on, you know, Texas businesses and different activities. So we are in business, and we are getting various visitors to visit the War Memorial and the Education Center, which is great, but we would like to certainly have more, and we're looking forward to the bigger ceremonies that we can have and honor the veterans of our community.
And going back a little bit, so just so that I have the history, were you two married before you went to Vietnam?
No, we were not. I went right out of high school.
Okay, great.
He's 3 years older than me, so I was only 15.
So anyway, no, we met several years after that. I got out of the military and actually had gone to college and then started my career.
Right, very right. And you say that you have a daughter. Where does she live?
She lives here in Amarillo. And she's married to a Marine veteran that served in Iraq, and he works for the VA hospital. And they have a nice life.
Must be nice to have them close by.
Oh, it is. The grandkids want to spend the night every weekend.
Oh.
Which we usually let them, because we know they're going to grow up and have different interests, and so we're taking advantage while we can.
Yesterday, I just took them snow sledding, so it was great. We had a lot of fun.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And we still have about 10 minutes left, so I'm curious, Rosemary, if you want to talk at all about, you know, your life growing up or anything that you want to add to the history of this recording today.
Well, as I said on my identity paragraph, my mother married an American GI after the end of the war in France. She was only 17, but her parents thought it would be a better life for her at the time, because Europe was so in destruction that they just thought it would be a good opportunity for her. But she came here, and it was not. I think that happened to a lot of war brides. After three children, the marriage didn't work out. And my mother, she always says she's not a Catholic now, but she grew up in a Catholic church and Catholic school. And she said she learned, she was taught the best values and morals. And she just gave that to her children, and empathy. She was just a wonderful mother and worked real hard, never got to go back to France to see her parents, see her siblings, never got to go back. I think that growing up that way has just made me a better person in some ways. I don't think take anything for granted. I'm so thankful for everything I have, whether it's big or small. It's just, life is good. That's all I know. Life is good. No matter what kind of circumstances you come from, you can always find positives, and you can always find a rainbow out there. Life is just good if you just open your eyes and see it.
And we were actually very fortunate to plan a trip back to France.
Yes.
And look up Rosemary's mom's family.
Yes, I got to meet cousins that, and my mother had two sisters still living at the time. Got to meet them, go to the graves of my grandparents and great-grandparents. My mother talks a lot about the war, what they went through, how hard it was. And she wastes nothing today, nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's because of how she grew up. And we just went back and saw a lot of history. My grandfather was he was an officer in the French army. It was just a hard time in those people's lives. And then when I think about all the young American GIs that went over there and they lost their lives and they never had a chance to have a home, have a wife, have children, no love. It's just so heartbreaking. But when I think about the liberation of the French people and all the people in Europe, what it did for my mother and her family and everybody else, you know, the war was probably worth it, you know, and all the lost lives. But people don't realize how many civilians died during that war also, how many civilians that were not involved in the war, but they died.
And we did have an opportunity to go to Normandy,
yes.
The beaches
yes.
There that the U.S. did, you know, where they did invade France. And it was very, very surreal. And, you know, there's been nothing built or actually on those beaches.
Yes.
Because of that. And they got several monuments that, you know, they have built. But the cemeteries are just huge. I mean, it's just hard to imagine how many military and American lives were lost over there. And when you stand on the beach and look down the beach and how long it is, and you see, you realize the GIs coming in on the beach, and they just didn't have a chance coming up on the beach, you know. And we went into some of the bunkers that they were firing machine guns toward the Americans, and there's those bunkers you could not even see from the ocean, so they didn't even know they were there.
They just didn't have a chance.
They were just really, really unfortunate, and a lot of them didn't even make it off the beach.
Yeah.
So that was really, really sad. It really, really is a sad. It was a very interesting trip and very worthwhile trip, but very sad.
Yeah, it's very interesting for me to hear about these stories as a young person, because I can only read about these kinds of things, and folks who have actually lived through them have actually lived through them. So I feel it's very important to have all of this history recorded, and just part of the American history.
When my mother was living during the war, they lived south of Paris in a little village. The name of the village was Lenray, and it was 9 miles near Chateau Dun, and there was a German air base there. And the Germans, every once in a while, of course the Germans were there all the time, but she talks about how hard it was and how her mother and her grandmother would protect them from the Germans, and it was very, very scary for them. And she would ride her bicycle 9 miles to get rations. The Germans would give them rations, and it was like 2 pieces of bread for like a week for each person in the family. And the stories that they could tell, if we could, if everybody could just hear them. And my mother's 93 now, and she's still living, and she still talks about all those things. And I'm so glad, because I want to hear them.
Yeah,
we were able to visit those little towns that she lived in and grew up in. And you might tell how your mom met your dad.
Well, there in Lenray, my mother was sitting on a bench, and my dad was stationed at that air base that the Germans had occupied, but it was liberated by the Americans. And my dad and a group of soldiers were riding by on a bicycle, because that's how they got around, was on bicycles during World War II, the soldiers and everything. And he was riding by, and he saw my mother sitting on that bench, and that was it. Mm-hmm. He pursued her after that, and that's how he met my mother. But it turned out not to be a good thing. And sometimes she's bitter about it, and she wishes that she had stayed in her home country and there with her family. And but life is what it is.
Do you think that she would be interested in doing one of these recordings? I think it would be very special if you would be able to do one of these with her, so her story can be part of the record.
I don't know. I would have to ask her. She's kind of shy. So I don't know. I would have to ask her.
Yeah, it might be worth asking, just because it's cool. Like, you've told, you know, your part of the history, but to have hers as well might be really special for you and for your daughter and your grandchildren and great grandchildren someday. So maybe worth asking. Yeah.
I wish I had asked my dad more questions. You know, he was in the Army Air Corps, and they participated in D-Day and flew paratroopers and over the English Channel. But I just didn't. And now I'm wondering, why didn't you? And later he developed Alzheimer's, and, you know, he couldn't tell us. And I think it's so important that young people talk to their parents, the ones that have been in the military and in war, and hear those stories.
Yeah.
My little neighbor we had a neighbor for 25 years, and he was a rear gunner in a B-17. And he told me a few stories about how they were shot down in Poland and what they went through. And I just wish we would have asked more questions and heard more. And
well, it's good to keep asking the questions. So you're very lucky to still have your mother around. So make sure to ask all your questions.
I try, and she tries to remember, you know, like I said, she's 93, but once in a while she'll say, well, I remember how my grandmother would make them little house shoe booties out of an army blanket every year. And they would wear those little booties inside their wooden shoes to walk to school. She remembered that the other day and told me about it. And I thought, oh, that is so neat.
It is neat. It is neat.
Well, there's a picture of me when I was 18.
Oh, wow.
I was in Vietnam.
Wow. Well, thank you both so much for sharing. We've come to the end of the recording, so I'm going to stop it, but just want to thank you both so much for letting me ask some questions.
Well, we hope it went well for you. And
you're welcome.
What you can.
And where are you at today?
Just give me one moment. I'm going to pause the recording here.
Okay.